because you will need to be much more general here. Clients and the environment expect you to kind of to be, I'm not saying that you should be a total generalist about everything. You need to have some kind of special angle as well in what you're doing. Broaden yourself, and that could also be having dual degrees or something like that as well. That could be quite helpful.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Student Lawyer Podcast Series. Whether you're at school, sixth form, university, thinking about a career in law, or exploring law careers, you're in the right place. We are the one-stop shop for student lawyers. If you'd like to join the Student Lawyer as a writer, please email hello@thestudentlawyer.com. This episode is sponsored by the University of Law. The University of Law offers a range of undergraduate and postgraduate courses and master's degrees alongside an award-winning pro bono clinic, so you can build up your legal experience while studying. And their experienced career service will enable you to put your best foot forward when launching your legal career. The courses are employment focused and based on real legal practice, so you'll be better prepared for the workplace. Part-time and online study options are available, so you can work and study at the same time. Click the link in the description box of the podcast to find out more about the courses on offer. Welcome to the Student Lawyer Podcast Series. My name's Camilla. I'm a trainee solicitor and I'm going to be your host for today. In today's episode, we are joined by Anders Nilsson, Managing Partner and Head of Middle East at Bird & Bird, based in the Abu Dhabi office. Anders is a corporate M&A lawyer with expertise in the aviation sector. In this episode, Anders will be providing insight into the legal market in the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia and explaining what opportunities there are for lawyers in the region. And if you've ever thought about working in the Middle East, Anders will be providing some insight into how junior lawyers and aspiring lawyers can go about making the move, and also providing some general career advice along the way, including the key skills that junior and aspiring lawyers should be aiming to demonstrate and develop. So without further ado, let's welcome Anders onto the show.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. Really great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much. And I've got a lot of questions for you today, so I'm going to kick off straight into the episode.
Yeah.
I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about your career to date.
Right. Yeah, of course. It's happy to. So as you know, I'm Swedish. So I was trained and I went to university in Sweden, and that's obviously, it's a civil law country. So it's a bit different from UK. So you have basically quite broad university, 4.5 year university law school thing. So you basically get the master directly when you kind of end that course. So so that may be a bit different from UK with the whole training system and so forth. But directly after that, as it's kind of usual in Sweden, you start clerking at the courts. But I didn't do that because, I mean, my way has been quite kind of, it's a long and winding road rather than anything else. So, funnily enough, I mean, some people who know me, they think that I've been very kind of, had my kind of goal set very early on, what to do, etc. And I've never had really kind of goals in the terms of I want to be this and that type of lawyer at a certain after a certain year something, but I've always been quite keen to always kind of motivated to see that I've always done something which was interesting and fulfilling, which also means that you kind of maybe jump around a bit, which sometimes is not a good thing, but I think it's important to have seen many parts of the profession. So after that kind of flying into kind of my what I did, so I started actually in looking into an academic career first in public international law. So I studied at Uppsala University in Sweden, and I worked my last year during my student for one of the professors. And so I was into a bit into that. And then a door opened up to work for a state-owned company or consortium between the Danish and the Swedish governments. They were building a bridge between Denmark and Sweden. And it tagged very well into one of the things I've kind of looked into during my final year in at university. So I started working for them actually for 6 months, and that was quite interesting. We're building a bridge with it was two state-owned pub entities, and they kind of work together in an entity formed under public international law rather than just a normal LLC or something like that, right? So I did that. That took me into another project where we're building a big tunnel under one of the cities in which was connected to this bridge. So I was still down south in Sweden, but I then felt I wanted to kind of to go back into kind of the more kind of the normal path. So I started clerking at one of the courts in Stockholm. And that's basically being one of the lawyers preparing the matters at hand for the judge. And you take actually quite, you know, active part in the whole process there. So that was very interesting. So curious as I am, that kind of led me into kind of thinking that, you know, being a judge could be quite interesting. And in Sweden, that's something you basically choose quite early on to do. So I applied into kind of to be part of that process after I've completed 2 years clerking for at the lower court. So I was accepted to the Court of Appeal to do that. So I started that thing, and when I've done that, and I really one of my most interesting kind of parts of my career to work at the Court of Appeal preparing cases. I did a lot of EU related matters, which of course kind of is, well, it's not that important for UK any longer, but in other European countries, knowing your EU law is quite a good thing, and it's quite an interesting kind of universe in itself. So I did that, got my basically approval to become a judge, and got the position at one of the lower instance courts as well. But at the same time, I also got approached by a newly listed company within the telecom sector, if I wanted to kind of to come and join their M&A department. So you see, very kind of totally different thing. But that sounded extremely interesting as well. And you can always kind of get back into kind of the public and the court thing. So I just thought, well, why not try that? So I did that. So now we're 3 years into since I took my exam. And yeah, I started to work with private and public M&A for this company, traveling around in Europe, and we were buying companies. And that was a totally different thing, extremely interesting. I was the most junior lawyer that team, so I joined an in-house team where I was the most junior, and learned a lot, definitely. Worked hard for 2 years, and that kind of consolidation period and that period of transactions kind of came to an end, and I managed to get a internship with one of the American firms that kind of work with Skadden.Arp. So I went to New York to work as a foreign associate there. They had a bit of a Scandinavian desk in the New York office. So we're now 2003, 2004, something like that. So like 20 years ago, basically, time flies. And that was great. And I think that's when I really I really got that, you know, into that, you know, private practice is, is really interesting, and it's you meet a lot of different clients. Your role changes quite a lot depending on the clients you're working with. So lots of different industries and so forth. So if you're a curious person, that's kind of quite a good thing. And I also think that I was quite well suited for that, the advisory role, in the sense where which you can't have if you're a judge, for example. Then is you have a very kind of strict kind of, your role is very limited. Well, it's not limited, but it's, you know, you need to behave within that role. You can't because it's obviously a very important kind of job, and you fill a defined role within the legal system and so forth. Worked in New York, but love and private life kind of took me back to Sweden. That's basically, then we're 2004, that's when I joined Bird & Bird and their Stockholm office. So that's almost 20 years ago. I started with the law firm I'm still with, which I think it's quite, it's a good sign in terms of that organization. So I started to work with the firm, and but continue with corporate M&A, which is what I'm still doing, basically. So that's kind of the how I ended up at a law firm, at an international law firm, and in private practice.
Fantastic! Such an interesting career journey. I just love to hear about different lawyers' career journeys and how they ended up where they are. And it's just, yours is, you know, particularly interesting. And I think, you know, as someone who is, you know, thinking about qualification soon myself, it's refreshing to hear that you don't have to just pick one thing and then stick to it, because, you know, your career has evolved, naturally over time. And all the different experiences that you had, you know, working in public and international law in New York, the various other things that you've done, I'm sure that that has made you, you know, an excellent lawyer now. So those experiences being varied definitely, I'm sure, really helps. So
I think you're right in the sense that broaden yourself and having a lot of other experience, and actually that doesn't have to be in law. I think some of the best lawyers that I've met in my profession so far have been persons also who comes from another background, come from science or from well, something totally different than law, but that adds another layer to that knowledge. And I think especially in today's quite competitive world, I think it's quite important to stand out from the rest as well, just to kind of get through that first kind of cut of CVs when you're applying to a law firm, that the fact that you've done something other than law could be what makes you stand out. Of course, I think it's important that it's something that has some kind of bearing on what you are kind of applying to as well. Of course, right? So, but yeah, I mean, generally speaking, education and experience is something which you can't really have too much of.
I agree. And I think also just, I've had conversations with aspiring lawyers before, and they sometimes are worried because they don't have, reams and reams of legal experience before they apply for training contracts. But like you said, those other experiences can help, and it's just about pulling out those transferable skills, I think, to relate to, you know, what you'll be doing as a lawyer.
I think one thing, if you look at kind of careers and how a CV kind of comes up, because obviously I see a lot of CVs in my daily work as well. I think one thing which you can think of is, and I think I was lucky that all those different organizations or companies or I work with were kind of very well kind of regarded in their area, right? So that all helped me kind of a lot as well. And you also meet a lot of very, you know, well, fantastic people during that journey as well. But be if you know, do your research and check that is this kind of, if you, for example, I'm very much pro that you'll kind of go to another country and try to kind of to and during the studies or in early in your career, but then see to that you're actually working or interning with one of the best law firms in that country, rather than you know. So do your research a bit as well. I think it's a bit of a tip.
Great advice. Thank you for sharing that. And so you're managing partner and head of Middle East at Bird & Bird. That sounds like a very important job. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about what your role entails.
Yeah. I mean, very. I mean, that's definitely much more important jobs in the world, right? And I'm not saving lives, for example. But yeah, no, someone has to do it. I'd like to do it, and I hope that I'm okay. I'm good at it as well. Yeah, it's a bit of managing a law firm, especially in so the background was that, I mean, I worked with the Stockholm office, and then I started to work more and more with Middle Eastern clients in the particular field of aviation and defense. And then we opened up an office 2011 in Abu Dhabi, and I was working more and more with that office. And after a while, it was felt quite natural to kind of to move there, and because I saw the opportunities. So at that point, I was heading the corporate department in Stockholm, and thankfully for and a lot of internal supporters in my in the firm and in the management of the firm, they kind of found that could be a good idea to do that. So I did that, and then we were a tiny office in Abu Dhabi at that point, and then I moved 2014 with my family and two kids, and 15 I took over as managing partner for the firm, and then started to look into kind of how to best grow it. So I worked quite a lot of, but not only growing my own practice, but also helping the office to grow and finding the right people and so forth. So that takes quite a lot of my time in terms of, and we're still in the growth phase actually, growing steadily but slowly, and we're adding another office in Riyadh, for example, now to the organization here. And yeah, it's a lot about finding the right people. I think I people are in a law firm, people are the assets. Sometimes the brand is also asset, but that brand would never have been something or become something unless you have good people around it. So it's very much a people's game.
Absolutely. I think that's really interesting. And you mentioned that you trained in a civil law jurisdiction. So can lawyers from any jurisdiction work in the UAE automatically, or do you need to become cross-qualified? How does that work?
No, yeah, so that's a good thing with the UAE in that sense, that if you are qualified at a kind of a fairly recognized other jurisdiction, you can practice here as well. So you can, and well, it's a bit of a complex system because we have two free zones, DIFC in Dubai, which is the financial free zone there, and then a free zone in Abu Dhabi called ADGM, and those are, ADGM is a fully English law-based jurisdiction, common law-based, and DFC is a bit of a hybrid, but it's definitely leaning towards common law as well. And then you have everything outside of those three zones, and that's which we would call mainland here, and that's a civil law-based jurisdiction. So coming from Sweden and looking at the kind of civil code in mainland, it's actually quite similar in terms of if you break it down to kind of general principles and stuff like that, and obviously the methodology is very similar because it's a civil law country. But here's something for the in the free zones, it's mainly English law or DFC law, it could be as well, but that's very well suited for the common law lawyer of course. So it's something here for anyone. So forth. The only thing we can't do as an international, as a licensed international law firm, is to appear in the courts. For that, you need to be Emirati owned firm or controlled firm, and so we cooperate with local counsel in local courts, but we can appear in the courts of the AFC and ADGM because they have their own separate courts. So it's a bit of a patchwork of different jurisdictions here, which
I bet that's really interesting to have, you know, lawyers from lots of different jurisdictions working together in one place. It must be fascinating.
No, definitely. And I think, I mean, in our office, which is, I mean, we're 45-ish employees right now, maybe 50 now with the latest hires for Saudi, but something around that. And I think when we last counted, I think we were 19 different nationalities. So it's a very diverse kind of workforce in that sense.
Incredible.
That's fantastic. It's really good. I think diversity is a really good thing. But I mean, I think it's important that we all kind of share the same type of work culture. But if you add kind of different countries, different backgrounds, different cultures and religions and what have you, right? You add that into but you find some kind of common work culture or kind of approach to your profession, that's when things go really well, I think.
Absolutely. And what do you enjoy most about working in the UAE from a professional and a personal perspective?
So I think UAE and actually the region as such is a very interesting region from the perspective that it's going through quite a lot of transformation. We are transforming from an oil-based economy into something else, and that's something else. We really don't know that. What how would that look like? Is it tourist based? Is it knowledge services based? Is it what is it? Right. I think we're seeking into and looking into what that would be. But it's one thing is for sure. It's attracting a lot of interesting and talented people who want to do something. And if you look at the Middle East, I mean, we have and the Gulf. Probably around, say, 450 million Arab-speaking persons in Middle East at large, and a lot of talent. And unfortunately, a lot of the Middle East are also kind of quite struggling countries, both economically, or it could be from war or warlike kind of situations as well. And what the Gulf has been so good at is kind of creating a very safe place actually for your to live in, to do your business in, to have your family in, etc. And that means that Dubai, Qatar, Oman, Bahrain, and Saudi, of course, now is really kind of a place which kind of attracts a lot of interesting people who want to do something. And I think you can feel that energy when you're here. And I think that's really what made me want to go there at the first place.
Sounds absolutely ideal. Sounds really good.
I'd like to take a moment to speak about the University of Law, which is the university I decided to study my LPC at. The University of Law is the sponsor of this podcast and makes it possible for us to continue bringing these episodes to you. So we really appreciate you supporting us by supporting our sponsors. What really sets the University of Law apart from other universities is its belief in training students for the real world from the moment they accept a place. The University of Law's experienced career service and award-winning pro bono clinics offer students the chance to get real-life legal experience which can boost employability. They offer a range of undergraduate and postgraduate legal training and master's degrees designed by qualified experts to help students excel at any stage of their career. Their courses are employment-focused, honing key skills in a teaching environment based on real legal practice. Part-time and online study options are also available on many of their courses to help students work and study at the same time. If you'd like to find out more about the courses on offer, please click the link in the description box of the podcast.
And I'd like to move on to this another section of the podcast now, where I'm just going to ask you some questions about the legal industry in general in the UAE. So I know that in January 2023, Dubai unveiled its Dubai Economic Agenda, which aims to double Dubai's economy over the next 10 years and position it as one of the top global financial centers. And I know that Abu Dhabi also has an ambitious economic vision for 2030 as well. So I just wondered what developments you've seen in the time that you've been in the UAE, and what opportunities do you think will arise for lawyers in the region over the next sort of 5 to 10 years, you know, in light of the fact that it is going through this transformation period?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good question. And I mean, the perspective is that, I mean, I've been here for 10 years. I've been working in the region for maybe 12, 13 years. And there's a great change when it comes to kind of the economies, and obviously then all that will affect the legal industry. And the change is very much that it's been much more sophisticated. A lot of laws have been kind of revamped, reworked during the last, just say, the last 3-4 years, and more to come, which makes it a much, I'd say, easier place for businesses to do business, because things have become much more easier to kind of to get an oversight on what the regular framework is all about. 10-15 years ago, it was much more difficult just to kind of to know what the law said, what and how things actually would pan out. It was very much about talking to the different authorities, ministries, and other persons around, and kind of, I mean, it was fun in itself, but nowadays it's getting into much more kind of more mature legal system here. And if you also then combine that with that, it's been a quite big cultural change in terms of liberalization as well. Much easier to kind of visa situation, you can stay here for longer, it's not connected, doesn't have to be connected to your employment, etc. So and also cultural kind of changes, bit more, I think it's wrong to say westernized, because it's not like they want to be like Western, but a bit more liberal and modern in that sense, that, you know, you can live in Dubai, you can rent together without being married, for example, and stuff like that. And that really helps to be to open up the society in that sense.
Absolutely. And I know that just going back to what you said about it's easier to do work now in the UAE and it's become a bit more open. I think in 2020, a new decree was issued which introduced amendments to the UAE Companies Law, such as the removal of restrictions imposed on foreign ownership. Do you think there's been a noticeable impact on foreign investments into the UAE since that amendment? Has it changed?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it needs to be, when that law was announced, I think there were 50 other laws as well, which kind of also had kind of different impacts on the society. And before that, we had a new bankruptcy law coming in, making it much more kind of reliable and so forth. Right. So there's the whole, this, they've been actually fantastic in the country here in terms of working through all the kind of the more important laws that companies will kind of, well, you know, the important thing for companies is that they risks is normally not a problem if you know what the risks are, so you can kind of define them and you can mitigate them. But if you don't even know what the risks are, or know exactly how the legal system or the regulatory framework would look like, then there's uncertainty, and uncertainty is the worst thing for anyone who wants to invest money or time into something, right? And I think this is what they've really been good at working, removing a lot of uncertainty and making things easier, and dependencies, as you mentioned, on the foreign ownership, for example. You're not, you can, for most of the activities that you, as an international company, what that you want to kind of conduct here in the region, you can now do and own that company 100%. I mean, the system worked quite okay before as well, but it was just kind of another layer of complexity where you had to have a 51% local owner, and then you have to have a lot of other documents around that to kind of to mitigate the risks around that and so forth. That's not to say that you don't, sometimes it's really good to have a local partner as well. In certain businesses, it's probably even necessary to kind of to do that. But at least it's not something which is kind of legally is mandatory there. So I think it's made a lot of difference. And I think if we put it a bit into kind of a regional perspective, the reason I think why this has happened is, so they were talking about this when I moved here. They were talking about this 15 years ago as well, but nothing happened. But I think with the developments in Saudi, where there are extreme, you know, the Vision 2030 is changing that country to something totally different. It's and there's obviously a lot of money in that country as well. So UAE had to respond to that. So it's some form of healthy competition, I think, between in the region right now. And I think one of the responses from the UAE was to kind of make doing business even easier in the UAE. Another thing that's coming here is that there's an introduction of corporate taxes, right? So with that introduction, we've always said that, you know, the day they introduce corporate taxes, they need to remove the obligations to have a local sponsor or owner in your company, because you can't pay both, say, 10-15% to a local sponsor and then also pay taxes. So now we have taxes from this year and onwards, and we'll see kind of how that affected the other thing. So yeah, in that sense, I think the region is moving towards something which is much more like what we see in Western Europe and in UK or in USA, right? And that's just a natural development as well.
And you mentioned the corporate tax. So is that something like 9%? That's been introduced
between 9-15%. It depends a bit on
interesting
on your, yeah, and we still have free zones which are not where you're tax free, but if you do work outside of the free zone, you will probably have to pay that tax anyway, and so forth. But I mean, if you look at it from a international perspective, 9 or even 15%, that's quite low corporate tax. We still don't have individual taxes on the individual. That's maybe something that will come a bit later on, but then you probably need to kind of talk about citizenship and these issues as well if you start taxing people. But that's not for me to kind of, that's maybe a bit kind of off topic and a bit right for today's discussion. But the interesting thing here, and if we can kind of try to tie this into kind of the legal market, with changing laws, with more kind of normal level of regulatory and compliance kind of frameworks and taxes introduced, you can just see that, you know, it's not like you don't need lawyers here. It's not like, on the contrary, it's even more kind of important now. So I think we're looking ahead. I think we have some really good 15 to 20 years ahead of us in this region, where really good things will happen.
Very exciting time. And Saudi Arabia is in the process of undergoing an economic transformation, you mentioned. How is that affecting the legal market in the Middle East and law firms such as Bird & Bird? I know that you mentioned that there's an office opening in Riyadh.
Yeah, immensely, I'd say that. So just putting it in perspective, Saudi Arabia has 36 million something citizens, and UAE has about 9 million. Saudi Arabia is the real, like, is a real economic kind of powerhouse in that sense. So Saudi Arabia open up its for and they've done, as a response to all these actions that happen in the UAE, they then more or less the same and open up for visas where it can stay for much longer time and so forth, right? And also a lot of subsidies and so forth. If you then combine that with a, I'd almost say, cultural and social revolution in the country, where the younger generation, and well, so in Saudi Arabia, I think you have about 60% of the population is below 35 years. So and a lot of well-educated persons as well, and then opening up much more kind of on from a cultural perspective, letting women taking a much bigger place in the society. And when I say that, it's not just token individual women on certain places. We see women on the top positions of general councils, for example, in the bigger countries. Companies, we'll see them in the law firms. We'll see them everywhere, and you know, top policymakers are women in that country. So it's amazing to see, and obviously extremely positive. And the pace with a change happening in Saudi is incredible. If you're coming there visiting every month or so, you will see new things. New things will have happened. It will be maybe a totally new system to just get into the country. It will all be digital, or you see new buildings. You see new authorities have come up and so forth. So it's fantastic, really.
Yeah, it sounds like a really, really exciting time for the Middle East.
And I think just take it to the legal market in Saudi. So I think before the reform, because there's been a new reform, so you can basically get your own license as an international law firm. Before that reform, I think there were 19 international law firms who were kind of in partnership with local law firms. I think from what I know now, that's at least 35 international law firms who've applied for the international law firm license. So that's almost doubling of the international law firms.
And what do you think the biggest opportunities and challenges are for clients operating in the region?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny enough, it's more or less the same. I think the biggest challenge is the quick change, that things, laws are changing, the policies are changing, etc. So again, coming back to knowing what's around you and the regulations and things is important, of course. And if things are changing very quickly, that creates uncertainty, and uncertainty is normally not something which is positive. So that is the challenge. That's obviously also the opportunity, the ever-changing and the quick change. For a law firm, it's important. I mean, it just creates job for us, if you're honest. I mean, a new law, somebody needs kind of to interpret that new law and what that means for a client. So that will result in work for you. But the change will also, quite certain, create new type of companies and new clients for you as well.
And congratulations to Bird & Bird for winning the award of International Law Firm of the Year 2023. That's such an amazing achievement. And what do you think makes yes. Bird & Bird stand out?
Well, thank you. I mean, in one way, can you compete in law? I'm not really sure, but if you win it, then of course you say that, of course you can compete in law, and it's extremely important. I hope that it's a token of that we're doing something right in terms of what type of law we're advising on, what type of clients we are advising, and the people that we are attracting to our firm. And I think that's probably the most and foremost part, right? Again, good people, That's everything in this business, and it's not only about that you have kind of that they are technically skilled, because you have a lot of technically skilled lawyers everywhere, but I think it's even more important that you have persons with the right approach to clients, to their colleagues, and to other stakeholders. And I think that's a culture which I think we have a very good culture in our law firm to foster that type of personalities and so forth. So yeah, at least that's my view, but I'm obviously extremely biased.
I'm sure it's exactly as you say, I'm sure. But no, congratulations, that's really, really a great achievement. And I suppose you've sort of touched on it a little bit already, because you've emphasized how important, you know, it is for to have the right culture. But what would your advice be for winning and retaining business? You know, hopefully none of your competitors are listening.
No, well, I think actually, I mean, there's obviously not one silver bullet to do that, and it also depends on the type of law you're practicing and the type of clients. But I think, generally speaking, I think clients you should listen to your clients a lot. One kind of quite kind of thing that I can see from more junior lawyers is that they are so keen to tell the client how much they know about that particular piece of law and things, so they don't really take time to listen into the client. So I think that's the first thing: listen to your client, and also keep tracking your client. What's on the business and operational side? What are they doing? What are their biggest kind of challenges? What are the biggest wins right now? And trying to learn a bit about the industry. Industry and sector knowledge is something which our firm has always pushed. We were one of the first law firms in the 1980s to be a sector-focused firm. I mean, obviously, I'm fostered into it a bit, but I strongly believe that it's really important. If you really know what your clients are doing, then you also know the problems they're facing and the challenges, and then it will be easier for you to help them as well. And I've probably mentioned the word curious a number of times here. For me, curiosity is a main important kind of trait of with a lawyer. I mean, you should be interested you can't force yourself to be interested. So if you're not curious, maybe, well, then I'd say then maybe be a bit problematic, because, you know, being interested in what's happening around you with your clients and in other sectors of law, etc., is really important. And then things will follow quite naturally. So I think that's probably one approach. And the last thing in terms of kind of winning clients and retaining them is that clients are different. So it's also important too that your firm have different type of personalities and so forth, so you can pair them. So we've all seen that a certain client goes extremely well with one partner or one team or one couple of lawyers in the firm, but they really can't stand another partner's kind of way of approaching things, right? And it's interesting. So you just need to kind of to again listening in, have your radar out there to see, okay, are we really connecting with a client? And if not, drop all prestige and change. You know, invite in your colleague instead, who may be much better fit. So, you know, personal egos and prestige is something which is totally devastating for building business, and has, I mean, at least in our firm and in my offices, it has no place at all.
I really like that. That's really interesting to hear your perspectives on winning and retaining business. So thank you for sharing. And what advice would you have for junior lawyers who are keen to work in the UAE?
Okay, I think it's two things. Well, we've touched upon it a bit before. I think being broad is good, because you will need to be much more general here. Then clients and the environment expects you to kind of to be a bit. I'm not saying that you should be a total generalist about everything. You need to have some kind of special angle as well in what you're doing, but broaden yourself, and that could also be, you know, having maybe dual degrees or something like that as well. That could be quite helpful. But being broad and curious, coming back to that, right. And the other thing is, I think that having a coming here with a strong kind of with technical skills and a good basic platform of kind of legal methodology and so forth is quite good, because here it's a bit more. I mean, it's the legal system is maturing, but it's still not as mature as in UK or in Europe, for example. So I think it's quite good to kind of, if you've got those skills already at a good law firm in Europe or in UK before, I think that will help you. So I'd say it's quite doing your training and then working 1 or 2 years in London, for example, there, or in UK, that would be, it's a quite good kind of platform to do, because you will be thrown into so many strange things when you come here. So it's good to have that.
Yeah, that's good to know, actually, because I think, yeah, my next question was going to be, you know, would you advise coming over and, you know, as soon as you qualify? You know, some people might be keen to, you know, get over as soon as possible. But I think from what you've just said, it's better to do a couple of years in London, say, anywhere else, and then coming over.
So what we do is that we try to kind of to work. I mean, we work a lot with our other offices and London, of course, as well. And I think we're if there's someone who has an interest in the region, I think that's fantastic, because it must start with that interest. And I think the interest should probably be a bit more than it's just nice to kind of be in a place where the weather is nice in the winter and there's nice nightclub. I mean, it's a plus, definitely. The weather is nice here during 6-7 years, and there's some fantastic places to go out and party in Dubai and so forth. And of course, that's really good. But I think the interest should be a bit broader than that, actually having genuine interest in what's happening in the region and so forth. So, but if you have that, I think that's, we're trying to kind of to connect with those lawyers at an early stage in our different offices. And then you can come over for, that person can come over for, say, a month or two, and just kind of test it a bit. And that can be a good start. And then we may start using that person in when they're still based in London as well for work, because we're quite a small office here. So if we get really busy, we may need some couple of extra hands anyway, and so forth. And that's a good kind of good beginning as well.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good introduction into it, rather than just sort of moving over and jumping. Yeah.
And if I were 20 years right now, and I'm not, I'm 52, so it's quite far away from that. But if I were 20 years, I would start studying Arabic. I've always missed, because I don't speak Arabic, unfortunately. I have my wife is half Lebanese. She speaks Arabic. I've started to kind of try to learn Arabic since we met, but just haven't got the time to it and things. So, but the language, that would be an extremely, I mean, obviously, we're so fortunate in Europe and in UK right now that we have a lot of bilingual persons, right? And I think that's fantastic to have that, because in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, I mean, we work mostly in English, but in Saudi, for example, Arabic is much more kind of important in the daily work, and it opens up doors and work which you wouldn't have before that. So the language is, of course, important. I think that we are, and I actually in one way hope that we are moving from kind of this type of expat kind of society in the region, because it is a bit strange that you have Swedish guys running law firms here, right? I mean, in the real world, it should be someone who's from the country, but of course, I mean, I'm very lucky that that's the case. But I think what we will see in the future is much more local talent building up the backbone of law firms.
And what skills or characteristics should trainee lawyers or junior lawyers aim to develop and demonstrate to excel in their careers? I'm guessing that curiosity is going to be one.
Yeah, I won't mention that again, but that's definitely. But I think, I mean, you need to be a technically skilled and good lawyer, right? So I think the first years focus on that. So have that kind of really good foundation. And that's both in terms of drafting and also legal methodology. I mean, of course, we will see the disruption of our profession will be immense, I think, in terms of legal tech, etc. But I actually think that it will still be those who have a good legal analytical kind of approach, they will still be the ones that will kind of, they will be the ones that actually survive it. Because if you're mediocre, a mediocre lawyer will be easily replaced by AI. So I think focus on those skills, focus on what you're interested in, focus on these things that really suits you, not what your friends or family thinks you should do. Or what they say in media or in a podcast, what is kind of the most interesting thing to do. Really trying to do some soul searching there and find what is kind of, am I a DR person or am I a more transactional person? Do I like kind of being part of the commercial kind of part of my client, or am I more kind of, do I really like to kind of go deep into kind of the interpretation of a particular word in a legal text or in a case law or something like that, right? That's just things that will really determine that. And you probably don't know that until you kind of tested it a bit. So that's why I really think the UK system is fantastic, where you have rotation during your traineeship and really kind of good thing. I wish that they had something like that in Sweden, for example, where I am from. It's a really fantastic thing, because then you'll know. I mean, if you've been 6 months at the dispute resolution seat, right, and then you probably know whether you like it or not. Same with M&A or transactional work.
Absolutely. I think it's great that we get to experience, four different areas of practice before qualifying, but it can also make it quite difficult to make a decision at the end. So,
I think maybe that's a good thing then, because then you're a bit like, you saw my background. I think if I stayed working at the courts in Sweden, I probably had a really good life and happy life as well as a lawyer, right? So, and so forth. So it's not a life. I mean, the decision to kind of do DR or M&A, it's not like you can't change your mind. And I mean, to be honest, I wish that some of my M&A colleagues if they've sat and done a year at the DR, that would probably be really good for us. And vice versa, if the DR person's done a bit of M&A, that would probably also be a good thing. So it's not, it's not kind of the whole world if you do make a wrong decision.
That's comforting to know. And you're obviously proof that, you know, you can...
I've done a lot of wrong decisions. Yeah. which I have really. It's not yoga. I've done a lot of wrong decisions in my life, and you do.
No, I don't think they're a wrong decision.
I'm just kidding. Oh yes, okay. But experience is, of course, really important.
Yes, and if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice at the beginning of your career, what would that be?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And maybe sometimes it's not that kind of helpful to go back and say, oh, I should have done that. You kind of you just get depressed if you start kind of digging into that. But it's as a kind of a bit of a thought experiment, it's a good thing. I think that potentially doing a kind of another qualification maybe within finance as well. On the other hand, then I definitely wouldn't have had a life during university, so that's, and I probably missed out a lot of other stuff then. So but that could be something. I mentioned the language thing, that I mean, for me, but I mean, when I how would I know that I would end up in the Middle East when I was 20, right? Yeah. But I think, you know, dual qualifications, I think that's something which is I can see that. I have a lot of colleagues who are kind of both from finance, or they maybe have done just math or something like that. I mean, you're a bit lucky in the UK system, because obviously you can, during university, you can study wide range of different other stuff, and then you can focus in on the law. So I think that really takes care of that problem. And I really think the, maybe that would be my question. Maybe I should have actually studied in UK instead than in Sweden.
Wow.
Thinking about it, especially being in an English, well, we're not an English firm, but we obviously have a very strong kind of English kind of background. Right. But yeah.
So maybe doing something like economics or accounting or something like that at degree level, and then doing the conversion.
Yeah, definitely. Accounting, I don't know if you'll want to do that really, but that's just my personal view. No, it's definitely important to be able to read a balance sheet and so forth. Definitely. I think that could be something, but also looking a bit wider in our patent lawyers, some of those are kind of come from, have doctor's degrees in different science fields of science and so forth. Of course, if you're into intellectual property, for example, I think that could be extremely valuable.
Thank you, Anders. That has been a very interesting discussion about your career and your advice for junior lawyers. So thank you so much for coming on to the
podcast. Thank you. Thank you for the chance. And also, I hope I did a bit of promo for the region. I think this is a fantastic place to be, and despite geopolitical issues, etc. But I really think it has the future. I'm an optimist, and I'll say there's some great things will happen here, and it's happening here right now, but in the future as well. So don't hesitate. Take the chance.
That's very, yeah, it sounds like a really exciting time, and I definitely feel, yeah, excited about the future in the Middle East. So yeah, looking forward to seeing how it unfolds. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to this episode. And yeah, we'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
To hear more of the Student Lawyers podcast, hit the subscribe button and leave us a star rating and review. If you would like to join the Student Lawyer as a writer, please email hello@thestudentlawyer.com.